We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 292. Happy January, Scott. I'm not saying Happy New Year. I'm sick of that shit.
What's your cutoff day? I saw January you talking about 3rd. It on the 3rd. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, my thing is though, if you haven't spoken with somebody the week after the New Year's, like that week, because it was on a Monday night, right? So that week, if I haven't spoken with someone and I'm doing like a well wishes thing, I'll say it. The next week, I'm done with it for sure. So Happy New Year.
Oh God. Well, it's not been a Happy New Year. You know why?
Because you're a miserable son of a bitch.
Well, okay. So reason number one. Reason number two is I'm attempting to do this dry January thing.
Oh boy,
what's today? The 6th.
That's not good. That's not good for the show.
It's tough. I'm 6 days in. It's tough.
How do you do that when you have like the NFL playoffs?
I know that was really.
It was a bad thinking on that. You got to do that in like February when nothing happens.
Yeah, well, so Friday was the first, you know, because, you know, I usually don't even really drink during the week on a work night. But Friday night, I made it through Friday night. Actually, it wasn't too hard. But then yesterday we spoke to Anthony Siegler, we're going to release that episode on Tuesday. It's going to be a standalone episode. Talk to him for a while. He's a really nice kid. So check that out tomorrow.
Yeah, number one draft pick of the New York Yankees, Anthony Siegler, was fun conversation for sure.
Yeah, and I think we showed in that episode how big of college football fans we are.
Yeah, pretty much. We got exposed pretty hard.
But you know, so we finished that. I put on the Colts game and I really wanted to crack a beer.
Yeah. Well, I mean but the game
I didn't.
The game was pretty much done after, you know, the first quarter, first half really. And then the second game was just boring for the majority of it, so yeah, that's tough, man. I definitely drank some beers last night.
Yeah, I got roped into it.
And they were delicious.
I got roped into it. I'm going to see how I feel. I woke up this morning with a headache, and I think
that's called
it's
withdrawal.
I think it's my body assuming I drank last night.
Yeah. Is your hand shaking at this current moment? Like, keep a steady hand.
No, hands
okay.
I don't
know if you could do that with coffee in the mornings, but you may be shaking even further later in the day.
Heads pounding a little bit, but you know, I'm doing this to give my body a little bit of a break because the December with the holidays and everything, I feel like all you do is drink and eat for a month straight. And yeah. And with the March trip we have coming up with St. Patrick's Day, I know my body's going to have to go through hell that weekend. So I'm just giving myself January off.
Okay. All right. It's a bold move. We'll see how it pans out. I'm not in that boat. I just like to ruin my body every single month and stay consistent with it. So, but yeah, spring training, that's going to be a big weekend, St. Patrick's Day weekend. We have about 30 tickets that are already accounted for, total about 50 tickets that we have allotted for this thing. So really when they get sold, when we get it to right at 50, you know, unless they have more inventory, which it's depleting on a daily basis, as I'm talking to them, they'll be done. So make sure you guys, if you're planning on going to spring training, again, it's a really good weekend to go. They play the Red Sox that Friday. We'll be at that game. And then we're doing the event on Saturday, both 1 o'clock games. The Toronto Blue Jays are the opponent on Saturday. And again, we'll be in the bullpen club, which is on the right field side, up top. Great seats. You can see into the bullpen, hence the name. And the $70 ticket includes the game, your beer, it's domestic beer, so that's included, which is awesome. Some wine, fountain drinks, and then a full buffet, which is a pretty good buffet. We were chowing down on it for a while, and they keep it the whole thing open, I think until like the seventh inning or so. So it's a really good deal.
Yes, it's a ton of fun, and it's going to be a fun weekend with the St. Patrick's Day celebration. I've heard stories. I've heard people tweet us saying that is the craziest weekend for spring training down there.
I think we did that one time by accident a couple years ago as well. Maybe it was spring break. That was it. We were down in Tampa. We're like, why are there so many college kids everywhere? Yeah. And we realized it was spring break.
Yeah, I think so. That was the first year I think that we went.
Yeah, yeah. So we started going club hopping, obviously.
Yeah. And I had a 6 a.m. flight. Or you had a 6 – one of us had a 6 a.m. flight. The
it
next
seems
morning.
Like every year we have a 6 a.m. flight. Yeah. And again, I have a 6 a.m. flight.
Yeah, mine's 7, so I give myself that extra hour. But also, we've been talking about the regular season events. So if those are on the website, you guys can check them out. There are also the dates are in the show notes. So you can check those out there. We have 5 events this season. It's going to be a ton of fun. Hope to see everybody that came last year, plus some new faces. Really, that was all of those events were pretty much one of the highlights of last season for us.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the BP Crew thing is definitely something that we're spreading out. We've been organizing the chapters now, too, for different cities. So we're going to be doing that this year. And we've had a really good response from it. And that's, you know, kind of one of the big, you know, one of the big focuses for us this coming year is that we want to grow this community and grow the, you know, the opportunities for everybody to hang out in person, and not just online. I think that's it makes a, you know, for obviously a very different experience. And it's a lot of fun hanging out with like-minded people who are super passionate about the Yankees. So definitely put that on your list and come out to one of these events.
So with these chapters, when are we putting them through initiation?
Yeah, I'm still trying to work that out. You know, I got to figure out the exact dosage, you know, for each person as they come through. We got to figure out what they're going to get.
You were your frat president back in the day, right? So you've got experience with that.
Yeah, I was. I was the social chair for like 4 or 5 semesters. I couldn't give that one up. And then I was the president the last year of my college year. So it was the year that I was trying to be serious.
Yeah, I only did one semester as social chair.
Yeah. No, but I did a lot.
It's like the presidency. You can only serve one, you know, well, you can only serve a certain amount of terms. They didn't kick you out after a little while?
Nah, man, if you throw a good party, you can stay where you are. You know, if you do a good job in the social chair, it would be pretty dumb to try something new at that point. Like, we had a good run going, so we stuck with what was working.
You skim a little bit off the top.
Of what? Well, there was no money. The money just, there's no money in college. That is a bunch of nonsense. We had a thing where it was every guy when we had a party, we had closed parties for, so no other, it was like maybe 10 or 15 other guys could show up outside our fraternity, but we had a list, and every guy in our chapter had to bring a 30 pack when 30 packs were actually in existence. I don't even think you could buy one anymore. And then, so we had all the beer funded basically by the guys. We had a really good system going. And then, you know, for all the sororities, I would go on one-on-one meetings with all of their social chairs. So it was great.
Yeah, we used to collect $5 from every... Basically, we would sell tickets for $5. So we didn't care where the... Usually the girls got in free. So we'd had to sell enough to guys to collect enough $5 increments to be able to buy the beer for the party, basically.
Yeah. No, that's our system was calculated, so we didn't have more guys at our party. Yeah. It was for a reason.
All right, we've got a lot to talk about. So last week we kind of joked that the news cycle just came to a screeching halt between Christmas and New Year. But it's been a busy few days since we last talked. And I guess the headline is Britton's contract from last night, Saturday night. The news broke that he signed a multi-year contract with the Yankees. It's an interesting setup because it's the structure of it is 3 years, but it could be 2 years, it could be 4 years. Depending on if the Yankees pick up the option or if Britton opts into the contract or opts out. So it's $13 million a year with an opt-out clause after 2020. If the team does not exercise that option for the 2022 campaign. So really that second year is the focal point of this contract.
Yeah, essentially, I mean, we've been talking about the theme of these contracts, right, for a while and adding all these new options. And it's really the way things are going because it gives the player some ability to make some decisions. And then obviously the team has some insurance, you know, if they see a player that they want to keep on. But this one is different in the sense that the deal for the contract vesting for the fourth year has to be made after the second year, which I thought was really interesting and a good thing for Britton. And honestly, a good thing for the Yankees in the sense that if they see a healthy, productive Zach Britton for the first 2 years, then they're going to pick up that contract. And the worst thing that they will, theoretically be eating is, you know, that for that fourth year that, you know, who knows if he has a bad year or a down year in the third year, then they'll have to, live with that guy in the fourth year. Whereas Britton, if he comes off 2 dominant years, has the ability to go out back in the market if the Yankees don't pick up that option. So, or he could stay for that third year. So it's a really interesting option, I think, for both teams. And yeah, I'm curious to see if we see more like this because, definitely a lot of flexibility.
Yeah, I think it's genius by the Yankees because he could potentially make $53 million, which so far this offseason, he would be the highest paid reliever. But they're really only committing to 2 years at this point. 2 years at $13 million for Britain, which I think is very fair, especially considering what Andrew Miller and Robertson and some of these other relief pitchers got. I realized that Britton was not the Cy Young caliber Zach Britton that he was a couple years ago last season.
But we need to get that out of our head, right?
Right.
We need to get
he
that
was out coming of our off head. The Achilles injury. I think that affected his command, certainly, because his walks, that was the thing we talked about, right? His command was the uncharacteristic thing. He walked 11 guys. I believe I have the numbers in here. 11 guys in 25 innings, which was very un-Britton-like. And that's what got him in trouble.
No doubt.
You found some metrics on his ground ball percentage. Nice job on you.
Watch out.
Put
look
your
at that.
Big boy saber metrics pants
Scott Ryan
on.
Coming out with some saber metrics.
Yes. It was Scotty Saber.
It was a big week for me.
But his ground ball percentages were still in line with classic Zach Britton. But sometimes with that command, he would leave that ball up, and we saw the home run that he allowed, home runs he allowed in the playoffs. He allowed one of them in the wild card game, and I remember one from the Red Sox series. And when you think of Zach Britton, you think of just ground ball after ground ball. So
yeah,
hopefully next year, full year removed from that Achilles injury, and that's what the Yankees are banking on with this contract and the fact that they were in on Robertson, but they let him go to the Phillies. They are thinking Zach Britton is going to be better next year, and we want to sign up for that.
Yeah, I don't even know how really deep they were in on Robertson, honestly. I think from all the accounts, if you read between the lines and just kind of see where they were, I know there were some reports of when after he signed with the Phillies, he came out and talked about like, hey, I'll just do whatever I need to be for the team. Like, David Robertson's a team guy. He's going to stay team Lions. I still believe that through this whole process, he wanted an opportunity to close, and he wanted to find an opportunity in another team where he would, you know, at least have that chance to close. You look at the Phillies, they didn't have a closer. They have, you know, they'll be playing with some guys at the end, but the only guy that's a bona fide major league closer on that roster currently is David Robertson. So, you know, essentially he's going to be that guy.
Yeah,
the Yankees
but do you
didn't
think
have that opportunity.
You think he really cared? You think he really cared as long as he was getting closer money? Because he got to, what did he get? 12 million or 11 and a half million a year? It's almost that's right in line with what Andrew Miller, Joe Kelly, Jerry's Familia. I mean, even 13 million for Britton, it's pretty close. And when you look at the fact that Robertson represented himself, he saves the 10% fee, commission fee. So it's basically like he got the same money.
Yeah, there's some money left on the table, though. There's some articles out there about some things that he did. And he also talked about that. It was an interesting experience that I will never do again. But look, I do think Robertson wanted to close. I think he wanted at least the opportunity to be in that ninth inning. Because there's a potential now for, you know, if he has a good 2 years and he gets back into that closer role, he could still get another contract. And I think that's an important, when you're looking at longevity for earning, that is a big deal. Getting back into that ninth inning and becoming one of the few guys in major leagues who is available at a free agent time that has the recent closer numbers, to me, that makes you an attractive free agent than you're looking at. You're thrown in with the rest of the pool of you know, quote, just relievers. So I do think it's a distinction.
Yeah, but Robertson's been extremely durable for his career.
He has.
He's been very consistent. So I know he's a little bit. He's one of the older relievers on the market. He's going to be 34 years old next season, and Britton's only going to be 31. But like you said, when you're looking at Robertson's track record, you're not really concerned with that 34-year-old age.
Exactly. And I think you don't know how it's going to play out. Obviously, with age, things can happen.
Yeah, everything ends at some
relatively
point,
quickly.
But 2 years for, I don't think 2 years for David Robertson at 34 years old is risky at all.
No. Well, and there's also an option that he has for this year. I'm looking up his contract.
He
right
had
now.
Some contract incentives where he can make more. I don't think it was for another year, was it?
It's a club option in 2021 for $12 million. So it's his. They signed him for $19 million, $10 million base, $20 million, $11 million, and then there's a club option for 2021. So they have, if they want to keep him and they're liking what they see, they can keep him through 2021 at age 36 with a $12 million. So it's an escalating salary.
Mm-hmm.
By 1 year each year.
Yeah, and in my offseason plans originally, I wanted Robertson and Ottavino, mainly because I thought Britton was going to cost more than the Yankees were willing to give. they let Robertson walk. They chose to bring back Britton. I think that's a good move. I'm happy with the move. I think we're going to break down the bullpen, but they needed to do something. It would have, I think it would have been a very big oversight if they did not sign one of these free agent relievers to bolster the bullpen for next year.
No doubt. I mean, this is the area where I want them to spend money. I mean, I have been pretty open with the fact that, like, to me, the Machado thing makes some sense when you're looking at what the roster looks like. But I'm not going to be heartbroken if they don't sign him. Where they go and they spend money in the bullpen, where I think there's more of a need. You know, any money spent on pitching, I think, is better money spent, in my opinion. I think the offense can work itself out just fine. But that is a big deal. So I would like them actually to go out there now and to lock down one more guy, because there is a guy out there who has good success. And one of our writers, Conrad, on Brugs Pinstripes, just put out a really good article about Britton before the Britton signing, but Britton and Ottavino kind of breaking those both down and looking them as options. And to me, you know, with the way that Ottavino, and I know he's an older guy, he's what, 33 years old, I think, and coming off of a good success. But again, he's kind of one of those guys that, and you see this with the bullpen arms all the time, where, you know, someone will show up and have a really good year, and then the next year they're, you know, not the same guy anymore. And he's been inconsistent in his career, but coming off a very good year in a tough ballpark for pitchers. So I would like them to see to spend some money in that bullpen still and just lock it down even further, because again, you're hedging your pitching staff by doing that. You know, you couldn't get the Sabathia's at the end of the rotation as the fifth guy. You know, who knows if he were to go down, what would happen with guys coming up? I know there's some arms in the minor leagues that could come up and fill in that fifth spot. But again, if you have a lockdown bullpen and it's very deep, then you're hedging that bet.
Yeah, and as of now, we know that they have five locks for the bullpen next season: Chapman, Britton, Betances, Green, and Holder. And then you've got your maybe list: Tommy Canley, Tarpley, Herman, Loaisiga, Acevedo, Luis Sessa, and Ben Heller are all in that maybe category. If you added Ottavino, I still think you get all those maybes still filtering in. And who knows? I mean, Canley could kind of be an X factor here, right? Because they acquired Canley in 2017. They thought he was going to be a long-term bullpen piece that's controllable, that would evolve into a setup guy or something. Didn't happen. He took a step back last year. It was a mystery. Like, he was hurt. His velocity was down. Was he playing too much Fortnite? What the hell was going on with Tommy Canley? But if he turns back into 2017 Canley, well, then this bullpen, I mean, this bullpen's set.
Maybe it was just a long hangover from the Eagles Super Bowl win. Maybe he was just, you know, he hurt himself celebrating too much fist pumping and hurt the elbow and never came back. Look, the guy has, obviously we've seen the ability and the potential for him. He couldn't find the strike zone last year. That was another big problem with him. So something was going on with his mechanics. I really do. He is an X factor. I think he could be a huge piece out of that pen if he can reform that, if he come back to that shape. Because, you know, he was walking guys, but when he came over from Chicago, he was one of the guys coming out of the bullpen who had one of the lower, you know, walk ratios in the league. The guy threw strikes, nothing but strikes. So it was very out of character, you know, what we saw. But that's a good example from a guy that peaked and had a really good season with the White Sox, and then came over and completed that season with the Yankees, and then fell off the face of the planet the next year. And we see that with relievers, unfortunately. That's right. The only hesitancy and you know, thing that scares me a bit about Ottavino. He doesn't have the track record.
Right, because you look at his seasons and they seesaw. So that's a risk you're taking if you're giving him a multi-year contract. That would not have been a risk, I don't think, if you're signing Robertson. Now, if you think he wanted the closer role, then it might have been a moot point. But if it was strictly money and he was going to go to a place that he just got the best contract from, well, then I don't know why the Yankees would not have at least matched that contract. I think they could have done that.
Yeah, see, that's what's puzzling to me, and that's why I'm really believing more of the narrative that he wanted an opportunity to be somewhere to close. The other thing is, you know, we didn't really talk too much about this because it was very gray. There wasn't really a lot of clear information about it, so we didn't really take many liberties with it because it's definitely a sensitive subject. But the whole player share thing in the playoffs and giving into the clubhouse, you know, there could have been, and David Robertson being kind of the you know, the goat on that one, like, he was kind of left out. I think, was it the Daily News or the Post?
Yeah, there was an unfair thing because he's the player rep on this. But right. He just had one vote like the rest of the team. So yeah. It's not like he made the decision to not give the clubhouse attendance the playoff shares. It was a team decision. It's just Robertson, unfortunately, was the representative.
And the way that the article was written, it was really more a slightly hit piece on Robertson.
Hit piece on Robertson.
Yeah, and his character and such. And honestly, the way that I see how Robertson is, and the way I you know imagine like how he is as a man, and he's always held himself to a high regard. It seems like he does a lot of charity work as well. So it seems like he's a genuinely a good dude. And you know that could have been some rumblings behind the scenes too, as far as a broken relationship with that whole deal. So. Who knows? But the way that the contract played out for him and the money that we saw him get, like the Yankees easily could have matched that. And when you're looking at the market and what you're getting, like the fact that Robertson and Ottavino, if you're looking at those two guys and you're looking at consistency, and you don't need that guy to be as dominant. I mean, you have a deep bullpen already. You really do want that consistency. To me, that's extremely important when you're looking at a back end piece. And David Robertson gave you all of that. So that just leads me to believe that there was something else.
Maybe. And for whatever it's worth, Mark Feinstein was on WFAN last week and shot that down. Said that was not a factor.
Yeah. Again, then why? Then the money wasn't a factor. The money.
But like
is
you
not
said,
a
we don't even know
the
if the Yankees
him.
Offered him a set contract and what it was. They were obviously talking to Robertson. They were in on Robertson. But if Robertson said, I have $23 million guaranteed from the Phillies. Did the Yankees say, okay, see you later? Or did they say, we will match that? Like, we don't know.
Again, that's why I'm thinking there's something else. Because that's when you're looking at the amount of money and what is, the market for these guys right now along the same lines. Like, to me, when you look at Ottavino and you look at Robertson, like, it's a no-brainer when you're thinking about consistency and who's done it in New York. There's a lot of things that you already know about David Robertson. Mm-hmm. If Ottavino came over to the New York Yankees and pitched and gave you the same numbers as David Robertson, we'd be ecstatic. So right. You kind of know what you're getting right there.
Well, Ottavino had a better...
Age isn't much of a factor, though.
Ottavino's a year younger. Ottavino had a better year in 2018 than Robertson did. But, like you just said, the Robertson is a known factor, and
right.
Ottavino isn't. So,
and the other thing about Robertson and Feinstein's shooting that stuff down, and all multiple beat writers have actually shot that down. That doesn't change my mind. I still think there's something in his own thinking.
Are you so are you saying it's something that Robertson is holding against the Yankees and possibly just the media in general? He didn't want to deal with it anymore, or is it a Yankees team organization perspective saying we're holding this against you?
No, I don't think it's anything against the team holding it against Robertson by any means. I think this is my personal belief that Robertson had other things, objectives in his mind,
just
saying that
off.
Whether he was mad or not, it could have been a factor. But here's the deal. Robertson keeps this stuff close to the vest. He doesn't come out and talk about any of this stuff. He's a very straightforward company guy. He's a good, very good pitcher. But he also is more on the side. He'll shy to the side of being walking that corporate line. Like he's not a controversial guy by any means. So if he has feelings like this, and I can also, again, just knowing the player and knowing how he's conducted himself for years, I'm just reading between the lines here. This is just me, giving you my perspective on why I think is that, he doesn't like to be slighted like that. And the fact is that he did have an opportunity with the Phillies. He liked the organization. It's on the East Coast. It checks the boxes what he was looking for as well. So, let's go there and have an opportunity to close. Clean chapter.
We ever think maybe he just didn't like the clubhouse attendance in Yankee Stadium? Maybe they pissed in his locker or something.
That could be. Maybe they didn't wear high socks when he was like, guys, every day. On this day, we're all going to wear high socks. I have this charity. Can we just wear high socks on this one day? And nobody's like, they're like, nah. They put low socks in his locker that day.
Obviously, I'm, I wish I love David Robertson. I think he.
Me too.
Yeah, he is what you want out of a player on your team. He was great for the season and a half after they acquired him back from the White Sox. I mean, think about like what he did in that year and a half. I mean, the memorable stuff that he had when he's grabbing his crotch after Sanchez gets hit in the groin in the wild card game. That's a great image. Or when he's sprinting in, that gif still goes around Twitter when he's sprinting in that Detroit brawl. So you know, I'm just happy that Robertson didn't go to the Red Sox, because I thought that was a real possibility, and the Red Sox need bullpen help, and I actually would have been upset about that, more from the sense that would have helped the Red Sox, and that would have been bad news for the Yankees.
No doubt. I mean, 2017 to me is the one thing that stands out in my head, the 2017 playoffs, when he came in the wild card game after Severino was was touched up early and pitched, I think, what, 4 1/3, something like that, and then in the Cleveland series came out when Sabathia got into the fourth inning and then came out and pitched 3 2/3. Like, that was the year that we saw, like, this guy, it doesn't matter, he's just going to go out there and throw as many innings as possible as they need him, and they just kept going with him. Gerard just kept going with him and pushing that button, and every single inning Robertson popped out and was just nails, was filthy in that playoff. So I have a lot of respect for the way that he pitches and conducts himself. And that's another reason why I'm looking at this and it's not adding up to me. The money, it went from a Yankees perspective, the money is fine, totally in line. In fact, if not cheap at that point for when you're looking at what you get from him. The fit on the Yankees perspective is exactly what you need, right? Another guy who come out, pitch to righties and lefties and get you out of, innings earlier than the seventh innings, eighth inning that have impact bats. The fit was there for the Yankees, the money and the way that he fits into this bullpen. So that's why I'm trying to read between the lines here. Something else is going on.
Yeah. Maybe we'll find out down the line what it is. But I don't see Robertson ever singing on it. I think Robertson will keep whatever it was. If there was something else, he'll just keep that to himself.
Yeah, it'll be somebody else who leaks it.
A couple of other notes in the bullpen. Sessa is out of options. That was reported this week, so we might have seen the last of Luis Sessa finally. And AJ Cole was DFA'd to make room for Troy Tulowitzki, who was the other big news of the week. Yankees signed him to a league minimum contract. There were reports that like 15 or 16 teams were heavily interested in Tulowitzki, and even the Cubs were going to give him the starting shortstop position while Russell is out. But he chose the Yankees.
And he may be gone for a long time because he seems like a very bad guy.
Yes, but he chose the Yankees because he loves those pinstripes, loved Derek Jeter, just obsessed with the Yankees. Remember when he was with Colorado, was he rehabbing and he just showed up?
He was visiting a doctor, I think.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, it's Jeter's last season. I got to see this guy one last time sitting in the legend seat. So Tulo finally is wearing the pinstripes. Everybody, it's the classic like bizarro Yankees, right? Like everybody at some point, 5 years after they were good, dons the pinstripes.
This could go in a couple different ways. We could have a flash in the pan with just the signing and be like, oh, Tulowitzki's a Yankee. And in 6-7 years, we're like, oh my God, I totally forgot.
Yep.
Troy Tulowitzki was a Yankee for a minute. Yeah, we have to add him to that bizarro list. Or we're getting a guy that has been very out and open about how he wants to play for the Yankees, who everybody who went to his workout says the guy is healthy, he's moving very well, he's looks like the defensive wizard that he had been. He was a very, very good defensive shortstop when he was healthy. And that's the contingency that we're going to have with him every time we talk about him, for literally every single thing we talk about him. If healthy, when healthy, if healthy, like that's going to be the line that follows him every single time we're talking about this guy. But if healthy could be a very good signing.
Yeah, that if doesn't even fit in this room. It's such a big if. I mean, he yeah. did not play in 2018. He was not healthy in 2017, which led to bad statistics. And then in 2016, he played like 130 games and he was bad. So the last time we saw even a decent Troy Tulowitzki,
bad. I wouldn't say bad.
He had a 7-something OPS. That's bad.
When you're looking at Tulowitzki numbers, first of all, expectations need to get off his name. We need to forget his name and look at a player, because that's who we got right now. We have a player at league minimum. That's who he is. He's a player at league minimum. He's just a guy. He's Jag. That's his name now. Because if we look at Tulowitzki, we're all going to be like, oh, not the same guy. Bust. That's not what we need. We don't need Troy Tulowitzki to be that guy.
Uh-huh. What do we need?
We need a Neil Walker type. We need a guy who's going to go out there, play good defense, and then show some pop with the bat.
Tulowitzki can't play good defense at this point in his career. He was a good defender in 2012 with the Rockies. He's not a good defensive shortstop anymore.
He is if he's healthy.
God. If all you needed was a good defensive shortstop while Didi is out, then why wouldn't you bring in someone like Hecheverria?
Well, I still think they should sign him. I still think that's an option. But the thing is that Tulowitzki gave upside, and there's no downside here. There's nothing. There's no downside. That's the beautiful part about this. They're bringing him in for spring training. He's got a league minimum contract.
I don't think
that if he comes out and is not the same guy or gets hurt or whatever, that they're just not going to get rid of him? They will. They'll just cut him. It's fine. It's no harm, no foul. Let's see what you got.
If he is adequate and they're comfortable with him starting opening day shortstop, and Manny Machado is not on this team, and Miguel Andujar is still at third base, the left side of the infield is absolute trash defensively.
Well, again, that's just not true. Because if he is the starting shortstop at opening day, that means he went through an entire spring training, which means he's healthy, and he's most likely back to the Tulowitzki defensively, because I don't think you're going to see much of a downside on his defensive side if he is healthy. When you have heel injuries on both feet, That's gonna affect you, your range, and how you play shortstop.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But if he gets through an entire spring training, what you're saying is he's the opening day shortstop. Then we're deeming him healthy. No.
Okay, so is he gonna be like league average defensively?
Probably a tick above it.
Okay, yeah. And you have the worst third baseman in baseball defensively playing next to him. That's a bad.
I mean,
left
we're
side
saying
of the
I'm
infield.
Saying a tick
That's
above
bad.
It is probably as bad as he'll be if he's healthy. But also the very high probability, again, if he's the opening day shortstop, we're assuming health right now, that he's going to be much better than league average at shortstop. And that's what I think they're seeing.
I just don't see the infield being Luke Voit at first base, Gleyber Torres at second, Tulowitzki at short, and Andujar at third. And Cashman spoke to the media this week and said, if the season began tomorrow, the Yankees have that infield, and I, quote, feel very comfortable with that. Flat out do not buy that. I don't believe that. There's no way he could feel very comfortable with that.
Yeah, I mean, he's... Dude. Cashman's talking, man. He's still in the
very
but
he doesn't
well,
lie.
Very
you
much
know
engaged.
Cashman doesn't. He doesn't he,
absolutely.
Lie.
Well, that's the beauty of it. You don't think he doesn't lie. Now, a lot of people are saying he doesn't lie. He's got you right where he wants you.
He's
of course
like
he
liar,
lies.
Liar. He can't.
No, he lies. He lies all the time. He just makes it. You know, it sound great. He doesn't always give his full hand ever. Like this guy is open with the way he feels more than most GMs, I'd say. But he keeps a lot of things close to the vest. Absolutely, a lot of things. They talked about trading Sonny Gray as a definite. Already said out the door, after the World Series, after the playoffs, and that kid is still on this team. So it didn't happen immediately.
Yeah, I don't see a way where now they don't sign Machado.
I mean, I do. I think that there's options that they could go out there. You talked about adding another defensive shortstop or another guy that could float around. And I still think Hecheverria is a very, very good option for this team. He does give you, again, hedging the bets. Like that's to me what we're looking at here. This Yankees team is so ready to go. You have to go out and hedge bets, especially if you're coming in with guys like Tulowitzki who have a giant amount of risk as far as like the player itself, the contract, there's no risk, but there is a possibility if you're depending on him, there's risk. So a guy like Hecheverria who could play short, who could play third, who could play second, you know, this guy can go all over and give you a one of the best gloves in baseball. He's that good. It makes a lot of sense to add him right now. I still think that he should be part of this team.
All right. Stay with me on this. So,
oh God.
Troy Tulowitzki had offers or interest from multiple teams, right? Mm-hmm. A dozen teams, potentially. He chose the Yankees. He talked to Cashman about what their plans are with Manny Machado. Would he have chose the Yankees if he knew he had no chance at playing for the Yankees if they were planning on keeping Andujar and signing Manny Machado? Maybe Brian Cashman led him to believe we're our plan is to have Manny Machado at third base and you at shortstop. That is our plan to start the season. And then when Didi comes back, Didi's going to take over and you're going to be our floater guy.
I mean, it's possible. It's they definitely, the reports were out there that said that Cashman or whomever reached out to Machado and told him that they were going to sign Tulowitzki. So they were very open with the fact that they were signing him to the Machado guys. So yeah, I mean, it could be, but the thing is even if that weren't the case and they go out and they stay with Andujar, he's going to be the third baseman. Why does that change with Tulowitzki? Why does he care?
Because if their plan was to keep Andujar and sign Manny Machado, then Tulowitzki has no place. He has no shot at playing. Because in that scenario, Machado's the shortstop until Didi comes back.
Maybe. I mean, but the thing is that even if they kept Andujar, if you sign both of those guys, there's no guarantee that Andujar's starting at third base at that point when you have Machado there and a healthy, again, theoretically. I feel like I have to put air quotes over this every time. But Tulowitzki, you know, they might be floating him around. I mean, there have been people talking, and I know he worked out a couple times, played a little bit of first base. Who the hell knows with Andujar? It's so unclear what that vision is at this point, that anybody who talks about it is pure speculation, because nobody has any friggin' idea what the hell is happening with third base, Andujar, Machado, first base. You know, we're all just speculating at this point. But that being said, you know, having Hecheverria on this team does hedge a lot of bets, because you have a very good glove now. And honestly, he was better offensively than we expected, I think, last year. You know, and all he has to do is be adequate. Even if he's not, who cares? He's a damn good defender. And to me, that's an essential piece of having a guy that can float around the infield.
This is goes in nicely with one of our mailbag questions from one of our Bronx Pinstripes writers, Jared Saul. He says, who plays the most games at shortstop for the 2019 Yankees?
Yeah. I still think it's going to be Didi Gregorius.
Which means he would have to come back probably sometime in late June.
Yeah. I think that, again, speculation here, but Didi is an overachiever. It seems like that guy is just, I don't know. He does a lot of things very well. I have to believe that he's rehabbing extremely hard.
He's an overachiever,
he's an overachiever, so he's going to rehab
recover quicker
faster
from Tommy John surgery. Okay.
Yeah. Would not surprise me if Didi came back ahead of schedule.
So Jacoby Ellsbury is an underachiever.
Oh, big time.
Except he's an overachiever as far as getting people to give him dumb contracts.
I mean, the guy can earn like no other. There's no doubt. But he just doesn't do anything for the earning. It's amazing.
Who plays the second most games at shortstop for the Yankees?
Man, I think it's a sprinkled in mix. I don't want to jinx Tulowitzki by saying him. So I'm gonna plead the fifth on this.
Okay, so does Tulowitzki...
Hecheverria. Or whoever signed.
Hecheverria is not even on the roster, so right. Yeah.
I think a lot of this is let's keep Glaber at second base. That's a big part of, I think, why this is all happening. Let's add some more depth at shortstop or possible shortstop, because we really don't want to bring Glaber over to short. We want him to develop as the second baseman, because that's where we see him as the future New York Yankee. He's going to be our second baseman for a long time. So why are we going to mess with him and slide him over and back and forth? He wasn't very good defensively last year. He needs to focus on second base. And I think a lot of that
I'm 100% on board with that. Yes, that's their plan. And it's a smart plan. Who plays more games at shortstop, Troy Tulowitzki or Tyler Wade?
Jesus Christ. Hopefully Tulowitzki.
Because that's what I think they're going to get out of Tulowitzki.
Look, here's the thing with Tulowitzki. The other thing about him, you mentioned the fact that there were multiple teams. Tens of teams. About
hundreds of teams were in.
Many teams.
Japanese baseball, the Yomiuri Giants were in on signing Troy Tulowitzki.
So I was listening to the Dowd talking about him on his former GM of Colorado, talking about how his competitiveness and all these things. And the fact that all of these, get ready, because I'm going to get pumped up here.
Puke.
Get ready. So he is... had interest from everywhere. I mean, he had guarantees of starting shortstop
certain
places.
Guarantees. Then why the frick is he with the Yankees? It makes no damn sense.
Because the
don't
man
give me, he loves
competitive.
The Yankees.
Oh, he loves the Yankees, and he wants to prove that he's betting on himself, and I love it. So, I love that he had all these options, and he's choosing. Yeah, oh yeah, and
know
he's
what
choosing
when you
to
buy
play
into
with
shit.
The Yankees. Look, I'm buying into his mentality. That's what I'm buying into. I am buying into the fact that this guy is a competitor, knows that he was one of the best shortstops that was playing in the major leagues, and is pissed off that people are writing him off because of these injuries, things that he can't really control. Freakishly weird bone injuries to his heels. He wants to shed the fact. He wants to prove that people on the Yankees can get past heel injuries. He wants to say that Greg Bird is not... the standard of heel injuries. Troy Tulowitzki will be the new standard. He's going to come out there and prove it.
Here's a question. Who gets more plate appearances for the Yankees next year?
Why do you keep asking me these questions?
Troy Tulowitzki or Greg Bird?
Oh, come on. Tulowitzki. I have no faith in Greg Bird.
Oh, none. My God. Who gets more plate appearances for the Yankees next year? Luke Voit or Greg Bird?
It's an easy question. It's Luke Voit. Do you know what I was thinking about the other day? I think yesterday was National Bird Day, you know, and Greg mm-hmm. Bird popped into my mind again because there were things happening. Like, I think the YES Network was tweeting a bunch of stuff out. I truly believe this. And you know, maybe this is just me going off of a you know, something completely wrong. If Greg Bird were a dog guy, might be a two-time MVP at this point.
I think, what did I say? He's going to win comeback player of the year.
Yeah, I mean, you've already labeled him as an MVP. But well, that no, cat that not, he brings around and carries anymore, but he's and carries player. in his shirt and dresses up and just looks evil is a bad thing, man. It's a bad look. It really is. It's if you were a dog guy like a normal dude and just like have like a Labrador, I mean I fully believe that he would be a much better player and wouldn't have all these freakish injuries. It's just me, just my thought.
Well, if he was a dog guy, he couldn't be a worse player.
He would significantly be a better. I trust dog guys way more than I trust guys with cats.
I just think to wrap up this Tulowitzki thing, I think it's unnecessary. And I don't understand why the Yankees can't stay away from the used to be star. It kind of pisses me off that they cannot say no to the guy who was a name from 7 years ago.
Look, it would, if he got like, a guaranteed contract with incentives and all this other crap, and they like truly believe that he was going to be a guy, and it kind of showed that in the contract, and all this other stuff was around that he chose the Yankees after all these teams were interested in him. To me, there's no downside. I don't know how you could possibly hate this move. This is just you seeing a name and associating it with every other old name that has come to the Yankees. This is
no risk.
But there's no shame on you. That's the beauty.
Shame on you.
There's no risk. They're not counting on him. They don't need him. If he comes out and proves to be a guy that can help them, they'll keep him. If he doesn't, they won't.
Right.
There's no risk.
So that's why I don't see them. I don't see any way where they go through spring training without getting something else more solidified at shortstop. There's no way Troy Tulowitzki is their putting all their eggs in his basket for shortstop. I just don't see it happening.
If you're looking for a defensive guy and you're not looking for any offense, Hechavarria is one of the names. But you did mention Tyler Wade. We all expected Tyler Wade and kind of wanted him to take over that utility role. And he proved that he just can't hit in the major leagues. Like that's what we know about him right now. But the one thing he can do is defend. He's been one of the better, if not the best, shortstop in the Yankees system. He's a natural shortstop. He could play the outfield. He could play all the infield positions. So if we're looking for just a defensive shortstop, throw away the offense because it doesn't matter if that's what we're looking for. Then we do have an option internally because he can play defense at a high level.
Right. So, yeah. It's so, just how long, but. We but said that last
that's
year,
what we're looking for shortstop.
And he won the job out of spring training, the utility job, and he looked completely lost at the plate at the major league level.
Like, again, throw it away, though, but that's what we're talking about. You compare it to Hechavarria. That's what we're looking at, yeah?
So he was not Hechavarria at the plate. Hechavarria is not a good offensive player, but he was...
You're not hearing me. I'm saying throw away the offense. If we're looking at just a defensive player who can hedge that left side of the infield and then play other places, just defense, just looking at defense, we do have an internal option.
Well, we don't know really if Tyler Wade can play third base the way Hechavarria can.
Possibly. That would be the only thing, but he can play
the middle infield. He can play short and second, where Hechavarria can play short and third.
Hechavarria, you put him at second, he'll probably be a gold glove second base.
Probably.
And again, if you could play up the middle like that, with how nimble and fast Tyler Wade is, I wouldn't doubt that he could play a high level third baseman too.
Yeah, and then this is kind of also with the Tulowitzki signing, and then if they sign Hechavarria, then I don't see Neil Walker being on this team, which is fine. I don't need Neil Walker.
I don't think Neil Walker's an option anymore.
But I don't see that either. All right,
he can't play. Anywhere on the, or he can't play shortstop, and that's a big deal,
right? And he can play third base better than Andujar last year, but he's not. It's by any means he's not a great third baseman. So, The Machado saga, it's ongoing. I guess Dan Clark Sports was wrong that he was going to sign with the Yankees, announce the Yankees right after the new year. It's still going. There's a million reports out there, and I'm just getting sick of them. But I think what we're learning is the $500 million that was projected for either Machado or Harper a couple of years ago is not going to happen.
The guy that you mentioned, I think it's funny. I was reading something about someone who worked at one of the Baltimore newspapers or stations, and then I also saw someone call him Can Dark, which I think is hilarious. But apparently this guy, and this is kind of when you read between the lines of all of the names that he has on his bio, I could have told you that they were guest appearances at some point. He wasn't an employee. That happens a lot. And that's exactly what it looked like. But apparently the guy lives in Australia too, and has been to Baltimore one time and
what?
was unbearable because they brought him in as like a fan who covered the team from Australia. I don't know. I was reading something
he's Australian or he is just living there now.
From what I don't know. I don't know. Originally, I think he's an Australian.
Dan Clark Sports.
Yeah, so that's just to me the kind of makes the whole comedy of these Twitter guys who are
see,
just
now I'm back
and calling things.
I'm back in his camp if he's Australian.
There was someone talking about it who worked at one of the Massons or one of the papers that was like they brought him over and like gave him an experience, and apparently he was unbearable. So, and he's Australian.
Yeah. Well, he hates the Yankees. There's been old tweets of his going around that he's just hates
all right,
the Yankees.
We cannot waste any more airtime on this kid.
All right. We asked for people's Yankees New Year's resolutions. We got a few of them. Thank you, guys. I'm going to read them right now. But please, guys, take a minute. If you have not given the podcast a rating and review in iTunes or Google Play, Stitcher Radio, wherever it is you listen to us, give us a 5-star rating and review. It is the single most thing you as a listener can do that helps the show out other than continue to listen. The first New Year's resolution from Eric NS says, my wish is to have the Yankees use their financial advantage, not recklessly, but when you can improve the team for years to come, why not do so? And I guess probably talking about Manny Machado in that case. Gavin M345 says, I want to see Didi come back early with a bionic arm, even better than Evaldi's. I want his arm to be the strongest in history. I want Andujar to show up this spring with Adrian Beltre footwork at third. I want Glaber to be fully healed from the hip issues that no one his age should be dealing with. We aren't talking about Judge because he handles his business, and I think this could be Judge's first MVP year. Domingo Herman is out of options, but he is really good stuff. He should be converted into a full-time reliever, and he will be good. For the love of God, will somebody play a decent first base for the Yankees? I would like Jacoby Ellsbury to continue his epic vacation, and I think he should research with exotic ailments. Should research with exotic ailments and injuries. Okay.
He should resume. Maybe he should resume it.
Maybe. And the final one from KC Rival. Gary Sanchez, New Year's resolution to get in the best shape of his life. So, you agree with any of these?
Yeah, I like a lot of the breakdowns here. I think the fact that Andujar showing up with Adrian Beltre footwork is a dream. I love that. Mm-hmm. And I do agree that nobody at Glaber's age should be dealing with hip injuries. That's old guy stuff.
We talked about that last year. It's mildly concerning, isn't it?
I don't think it's I think those things. Just if it's a muscle issue and it's a strain like that.
Hip flexor. I mean, like A-Rod went through those hip flexor issues after he injected himself in the ass 4,000 times. Like,
I mean, there you go. I mean, there's a reason behind that.
No, that's what I'm saying. So what the hell is Glaber at 21 years old going through this crap?
I mean, it just could be a strain that just doesn't. It's hard. I can only imagine how hard it is to heal a muscle or a ligament like that in season as a baseball player with the amount of activity that they do. Even when they come back, like there's just so much repetition and so much activity on a daily basis. It's such a grind. I can only imagine how difficult it is to try to come back and be full strength at the end. So I think a full year, a full off season and him coming back healthy, it's going to he'll heal up a hell of a lot faster than any of these guys. So I'm not. Unless we see it continuing to play out in other years, I'm not going to call it a concern in 1 year, but just because I think that the type of injury is very difficult to just come back from. So in season, and he did play. It's not like he didn't play and wasn't productive. He just wasn't the same guy. And it kind of looked like, you know, he was, you know, flying open a little bit early. He was favoring it and just wasn't the same kid that we saw early in the season. So,
well, he went from an all-star,
much better player.
He went from an all-star to a struggling rookie. It was a big difference.
It was a big difference. It was a big difference. But again, a full offseason, I got nothing. The kid has all the talent in the world. And I think we're going to be very pleasantly surprised with Gleyber Torres coming into this year.
Yeah. All right, we got a couple mailbags before we wrap this show up. The first one's from Tom. Betances is a free agent after this season, and his stock can't be higher at the moment. Is there a scenario where you'd consider trading him? He says, this assumes we get two relievers, which only costs money. Obviously, he can dominate, but Betances with men on base still gives me headaches.
I mean, I don't think they're trading him by any means. That's we've talked about the, you know, trading him at his peak a couple years ago even, and they never did when all this like arbitration drama was happening. I think they're beyond that at this point right now. I think that he is, a huge part of this bullpen. He proved that last year when he tweaked his mechanics a little bit and got, moving forward a little bit, and rather than kind of rocking on his back foot and just, you know, moving most of his weight forward, you could see the difference in his mechanics. And at that point, when they did tweak something, I mean, the guy became the dominant Dylan Betances again. And when he's on, when he's throwing that fastball
for a strike. Did you call him Dylan? What are you?
No, Dylan.
You said Dylan.
I said Dylan. I just talked fast and it probably came out. God, it's Dylan Betances.
Randy Levine over here.
And the fact is that now when he is a dominant Dylan Betances, and when he can locate D-dog. That fastball,
D-dog,
he's just filthy. I mean, one of the best, most dominant dudes out there.
But it's interesting because he is going to be a free agent after this year. He's finally done with arbitration. And we know the history of the Yankees and Betances with arbitration. So there's a chance he does not re-sign with the Yankees. And that is another reason why what they did with Britton, coupling the fact that Chapman has an opt-out clause after this season, this bullpen could look a hell of a lot different going into 2020 than it does 2019.
Right, but this is not, the Yankees are not in a position where just because a guy is coming up for free agency the following year that you trade him because
no,
of
I'm not
that
saying
to try to get anything back. Yeah, you run that out and you get everything you can.
But with what they're doing this offseason for the bullpen, they could be planning ahead for if Betances leaves.
For sure. I mean, you saw that again with that Britton contract, the fact that they can extend it through the fourth year, and you're looking at the rest of it, you know, not just talking about Betances, but Aroldis Chapman has an opt-out after 2019, a player option. So there's a possibility that's that, you know, he has a ridiculous year, and I think he's getting, average, like $17 million or so.
Yeah, he's the highest paid year. Closer in the game.
If he thinks that he can get more money than that, someone's going to overpay him, or he can get he can get additional years. That's also a play. Maybe he could get 17, the same contract, but adding on years to it, that could be something.
And he might hold up the Yankees for that, kind of what Sabathia did when he opted out of his contract. I think what Kimbrel gets this offseason will tell us what Chapman could potentially do. Because if Kimbrel's asking for 6 years, I don't see him getting 6 years. But if he gets 5 years at $16, $17 million a year, well, then Chapman's going to say, I'm as good, at least, as this guy.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So at 2019, when you're looking at it after this year, it could look a lot different. So the fact that the Yankees are really in the driver's seat for Britton for a fourth year, a third and fourth year, it just, you know, it's smart. It really is. It is looking forward. It's, one of the guys in the reviews was talking about using their money wisely and planning for the future. You look at that Britton contract, that's exactly what that is.
Mm-hmm. All right. The last question is from Anthony. He is at Zook YPC on Twitter. I want to know your way too early predictions for next season's team MVP, comeback player of the year, and biggest surprise player of the year. Can I go first?
Go ahead.
Team MVP, Greg Bird. Comeback player of the year, Greg Bird. Biggest surprise player of the year, Greg Bird.
So you like Greg Bird? Big fan?
Yeah, big fan of Greg Bird.
Big fan of Greg Bird. I'll reverse this question on you. How many, who gets more plate appearances for the New York Yankees? Luke Voit or Greg Bird?
Greg Bird does. And I'm not being sarcastic anymore. I do not believe in Luke Voit.
Okay. I mean, I got nothing to say that I don't believe. There's nothing to show that, you know, he can't do it. I mean, who knows? Until he said, until he proves that he can't do it, that's what we
And
see
here's why. I still think the Yankees want Greg Bird to be a thing.
Of course they do.
So
he's still the left-handed bat that they want.
Even if he's, like, almost as good as Luke Voit, I think they're going to choose him over Luke Voit.
Yeah. We'll see. It's the fact that he's a left-handed bat changes things. And
changes things drastically, especially
if he can
in this
go out
lineup.
There and show that he's a the Greg Bird that they thought. But again, I mean, nobody even knows what that is anymore. So it's all who the hell knows at this point.
Luke Voit's fun. He can't help himself. He's like a big kid in a candy store out there. He hits a fly ball and he thinks it's going 5,000 feet. He does the Sammy Sosa hop. I get it. It's fun. But it's most likely a flash in the pan.
All right, so way too early stuff here, and this is I'm being forced to do this, so this is not my choice. So you know, get rid of your jinx comments because this is someone just choosing me to do this. All right, so MVP, I agree with our guy Gavin talking about Judge. I feel like this just feels like a big year for him, and you know, he's definitely the leader of this team. I think he's gonna have a monster year. So I'm gonna pencil him in for MVP.
Well, team MVP. And Judge has been the team MVP for the last 2 years. So him being a team MVP for a third year isn't that big of a...
But I'm talking about the league as
league
well.
MVP.
Yeah, I think he's got that. I mean, if he's the guy that could come out and play and could play a full year, you know, he's locked and loaded for that mm-hmm. team or for that MLB MVP. He's going to be among the top. And the fact that he already lost one very close, I think also in the minds of the jackasses that vote changes something. So I think that's a big possibility. I think we're going to see a big year for Gleyber Torres. Also, we're talking about comeback, like not really a comeback, but I think we're going to see big strides from him, both defensively and offensively with consistency. He showed what he can be for, you know, for the early part of last year. And I just think we're going to see another step with him. I think he's wise, mature beyond his years. And, you know, he just seems like the type of guy who could take a very big step forward fast. And that's what I expect from him. What was the other one? Biggest surprise?
Surprise.
Oh, man.
Do it. Do it. Come to the dark side.
Okay, biggest surprise of this year. I'm going to say Clint Frazier. I'm going to say Clint Frazier is going to be the primary left fielder. That he's going to come out and he's going to, you know, hit an adequate. I think he's going to be a 270, 280 hitter. We're going to see him hit for average, probably strike out too much, but he's going to hit when he's going to hit the ball, you know, good amount as well. I don't see him walking very much. So it's going to be a strikeout or a hit. And I think he's going to play a good left field. And I think we're going to see Gardner end up being the platoon outfielder.
Yeah, that's not a bad prediction. And I think what the Yankees would most want to happen. They want to see Frazier blossom into that starter role.
And that will also take another left-handed bat, you know, consistently out of the lineup.
It's true. Especially when you think about the start of the season with Didi on the disabled list and Gardner as a platoon player. And
yeah.
As of now, Luke Voit, the starting first baseman, there's no left-handed bats other than Hicks from the left side in that lineup.
It's definitely, when you're looking up lineup construction, and you know some of these guys can hit against righties, lefties, doesn't matter as much. But yeah, it's a glaring you know visual when you're looking up and down that lineup. The fact that the DD changes a lot, you know, the fact that he's not there is a big deal, and I think that's been downplayed to an extent too offensively.
No, we got 2014 MVP level Troy Tulowitzki coming in, so who cares about DD Gregorius?
And he could spray the ball. Doesn't matter. He can hit the right field.
Yeah.
His strength is to right center.
Uh huh. Well, his strength, when you look at his numbers, is the thin air in Colorado.
No, it's to right center. Right center. I don't care where you are. But again, we don't care about that as much. We just want him to be healthy and play defense, right?
Right, right. All right, guys. Thank you for submitting the mailbag questions. Thank you for submitting the New Year's resolutions. Again, Tuesday, we're going to have that Anthony Siegler conversation we had with him. He was just leaving the ballpark when we caught him. So again, really nice kid, fun conversation. First round draft pick from last year. Be fun to watch him go through the Yankee system. Scott,
let's shout out his boy. Who's the starting quarterback for the Clemson Tigers? Who's actually playing Monday night? So it'll be a nice little Nice little piece, and we'll look really stupid when we didn't know who his name.
Trevor Lawrence, you're kind of ruining the little ending of the conversation.
That's okay. I'm teasing the fact that and how much we don't watch college football.
Well,
the fact it'll be escalated because when we release this on Tuesday, the national championship game would have already happened.
Yeah, he might be a national champion, and we're like, wait, who's that
exactly.
guy?
Exactly. Right.
But he also, I asked him about NFL. And he started talking about college. So, like you said, we weren't in the mindset of college.
We were very taken aback. I was like, shit. Is he like a defensive lineman for the Eagles? Like
he's the gunner. He's the gunner on the Seahawks.
Right. No, he's the starting quarterback for one of the teams in the national championship. That's it.
Well, he told us to give him a shout out, so we're giving him a shout out.
Shout out. Yeah. Now that I know who he is, phenomenal.
I might actually watch Monday.
Probably going to be drafted by the Giants. And these kids will dominate New York together.
That would be fun. All right, that's going to do it for us. Again, Tuesday's episode. Check it out, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.